It's really crazy because it feels like a lifetime ago. Life has been so different before and after. It's just like hard to remember a time that Aaron lived at home. The morning of Simchat Torah, we went to shul. We were dancing outside, and someone came into the shul and said, "You guys need to daven inside. There's something going on." We were a bit nervous, but we went inside. Lived in Israel for many years, so I was kind of used to situations that were a bit scary. And then some of my kids weren't feeling so well, so I decided to take them home. And also, I was a bit nervous about the situation. And when I got home, I knocked on my neighbor's door, who's not religious, and I asked them if they had information about what was going on. And they opened the door, and I saw the TV in the background and some of the scenes of what was going on. And they said, like, 150 people, young people, were killed at a music festival. And hearing that was, like, devastating. We thought that was the worst of it. Definitely the biggest pigua that we've heard of. And I ran back to shul. I left my kids at home. I said, lock the door. I'm running back to tell my husband what happened. And I ran back to shul and said, you need to stop. Everyone needs to go home. Like, we can't be dancing with the Sefer Torah when we know, like, something so terrible is happening. And we had a few minute discussion, and he decided, no, we need to continue. Like, it's important. And he got the whole community together and said some Tehillim. And then when we got home, we like knew something was going on, but we didn't know what. We continued the day as normal. We had a special women's learning, which we dedicated in honor of the refuah, so to the health of anyone who was injured. And we kind of waited till after. I think in some ways it was not nice, but it was good that we had that extra bit of time before knowing everything that happened. And then Saturday night, we all turned on our phones and we saw the actual extent. It wasn't even the full extent. It was probably a few hundred people were killed, and we still thought that was the worst. I was very nervous because I have two brothers who live in Yeshuvim, and I thought something had happened to them. So I was relieved, obviously, that they were okay, but really sad to see how many people were affected. Aaron said, they told us to get our stuff ready. There's a chance I'll be called up. And in my head, I was thinking, like, you're not going to get called up. Like, they're going to call up, the top people in the army. They're not going to call up, like, everyone. We went to sleep. It was a hard night, but we went to sleep. And at 7 in the morning, we got woken up by a phone call. And he came into the room and said, in half an hour, I need to be out of the door with my stuff. And he put on his army uniform. And I remember crying and holding him and saying, like, please don't go, please don't go. Which I know was not fair to him because he needed to go. But it felt very surreal. Like, that's not something we do in 2023. Like, we don't send our husbands off to war. So that was very surreal. And he was sent to the north, which I was relieved about at the time because at least it was a bit safer than the south. And we didn't know when we would see him again or what would happen. And I was on my own with 5 kids, including a little baby, because they canceled school. So it was just kind of this, like, open-ended, very traumatic day, very difficult day of, like, there's terrible things going on in the country, and you've lost your support. We don't have, family who lives close by or anyone to help us, so really felt very alone and scared. Thankfully, the community has been incredible. I don't take it for granted at all. They've been, since the first day, just, like, everything from, like, bringing little surprises for the kids. The first time that Aaron came home to visit, the first time I told the kids that he was coming home to visit, my 8-year-old was like, no. I was like, what? Why don't you want, Abba to come home? And he said that we're going to stop getting presents from the shul. Because every day we're just bringing so many thoughtful gifts. And really taking care of us, making sure we had food, like making meal trains, and also things beyond that. Like last night they had a sushi and massage night, like just really feeling like people are taking care of you and supporting you. I definitely feel that, and we're very lucky that there's not so many of us and that we have a very supportive community with a lot of olim who really know what it's like. So I definitely felt that support. One thing that we did was one of the really hard things for the women in Miluim is going to the mikveh and coming home to an empty home. So we raised a lot of money, and we bought a special package, a gift package for the women with, like, ice cream, gift card, and a special bracha, and some chocolate, and just said, like, take some time for yourself. Obviously, we wish that, your spouse was with you. Gonna get choked up here a lot, but when I brought it to the mikveh, the woman in charge there, like, started crying, and I started crying. It was very emotional, and then a woman walked in to use the mikveh, and she said, is your husband a Miluim? And the woman said no, and she said, oh, I'm so sorry. I really want to give you ice cream, and the woman was like, but we were able to give, I think, 150 packages from our community, and that's also nice because it wasn't just for the people in our shul. It was for everyone and
everyone.
Natanya.
That's beautiful.
I think the most challenging thing is just the feeling of not being alone, but having to do it all myself. Like, obviously, I have a great network of friends, and they take care of me, but, you know, I still need to think, okay, where are we going to go for Shabbat? Okay, which appointment do we have to go? Who's going to take it? It's just, it's all on you. And I think also one of the challenges is that Aaron and I are having very different experiences, and we need very different things. So I think, you know, when he comes home, he's exhausted, and I'm exhausted, and we both, like, it's a visit. It's not, he's not home for good. So I think both of us, our expectations of that visit, what we're going through are very different. And I think trying to navigate that and take time as a couple to, you know, to reconnect and remember, you know, that we still live together, even if right now things are hard. So that's definitely been the biggest challenge, is just not feeling alone. And, you know, there's times where I want to reach out to him and I can't. You just, he's either unavailable or just emotionally also he's going through stuff and can't be there. Thank God I'm lucky. It's funny. I feel like there's this level of like luck, like, oh, well, at least he's in the north, or at least he's outside, you know, Gaza, or at least in different levels. So most of the time he has a phone. Every now and then he doesn't, but he can't usually speak as the same time as I can speak. So we can like message every now and then, or I can send a voice note and wait a few hours, but there's no immediate, okay, I'm trying to find something. I call him, where's the checkbook? Where's this? What do I do for this? And I just have to make decisions on my own. And that's hard.
Yeah.
On the plus side, you know, there's a lot of like life skills that I think that we've developed and learned, because you need to. So like, you know, being more on top of things, getting the kids ready the night before. I'm like, why did we never do that? And I hope that some of those stick. I think also you realize how strong you are, which some days feel stronger than others. So the first week, I think, was the hardest. My mother-in-law came to help me eventually, but the first week was really the hardest. And I hadn't been out of the house on my own for a few days, and I went to Rami Levy to, like, stock up on all the essentials. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I overbought. I just went crazy, like, everything, every snack item, just to help me get through it. And I started walking out of the store, and I realized, like, I couldn't carry it. And this older man who worked at the store was like, oh, you know, let me help you. And I was like, no, I'm fine. He's like, you're not fine. You can't carry it. And I just burst out crying. Like, I just lost it. Also, because I have to keep it together for my kids. That's also one of the really hard things, is that I can't cry in front of them. And he gave me a hug, and I just burst out crying in his arms. And it was like one of these, like, only in Israel moments. But then he looked at me and said, I don't know why you're crying. Like, and I looked at him like, it's 4 days into a war. What do you mean you don't know why I'm crying? And he looked at my head covering and said, but you're a believing woman. Like, don't you believe in God? Why are you crying? Everything's going to be okay. So it was very classic Israel. Like, here's a hug and a bit of musr, and you're going to be okay. And he made me take the cart home and bring it back. And I was too mortified to bring it back. So I sent my 12-year-old. I'm like, you go take the cart back. I mean, I think it's interesting, because people say often, like, oh, you're amazing. And you kind of think, well, I'm not. I just don't have a choice. And we all just have to get on with it. So it was interesting. My aunt sent me an email and said, you know, you're great. You got this. Don't forget you have survivor genes in you. Clearly referencing my grandmother, who has survived the Holocaust and Auschwitz. And I was thinking, it just put it in perspective for me. Like, I have a bad day. I go get rebar. Like, you know, my kids eat cereal for dinner. Like, it just really helped me. Okay, it's hard, but like, we'll get through it. And it's temporary. And like, thank God, you know, Aaron's doing something important. And like Corona or other things that we thought we're never going to get through this, you look back and, okay, we got through it. So I think just having a bit of perspective, I'm like, it's hard, but like, we can do this. I think that every mother out there just wants the best for her kids and her family and for society. And I think, or I hope it's true that most people just want peace and just want to live friendly and side by side. I think everyone just wants to just have a quiet, normal life. And I really hope that, you know, once this is all over, that can be achieved and we can live side by side happily, because I do think that's possible. I think especially coming from, you know, being Olim and coming from a different background of like multicultural people living next to each other, people learning from each other, I think it can happen. But yeah, we first need some level of peace and some level of, I don't think anyone wants this. If you met my husband, he's like the last person you would ever think would be fighting in this war, but there's a bigger calling out there right now. So before we were discussing also like one of the challenges keeping strong for your kids. Mm-hmm. So that first day when I went to the store and I bought tons of stuff, and one of the rules in our family is we're not allowed sugary cereals. And I came home with a big box of Cariot, which are like, you know, really sugary cereals. And my 12-year-old daughter said, now I know something is seriously going wrong because we do not usually are allowed this. And it's funny that that's the thing that made her realize like something serious is happening. In terms of not showing our kids, so this week, this Shabbat, my daughter turned 12. It was her bat mitzvah. My husband is a very, very hands-on parent. I think the hardest thing for him right now is not being available for the kids and not being a present father, which is what he wants to be. He's the rabbi of our shul, and usually, you know, his presence is very much felt in shul. And this week for her birthday, she turned 12, and he sent flowers, which I thought was really beautiful and made me cry a lot. But then sitting in shul with her, we got there early, and we're sitting there, and it was very hard to not cry in front of her, thinking, like, we're missing something. Like, he should be here. He should be a part of this. And knowing that how much he wants to be a part of it and how unfair it really is, that was really hard to keep it together. After the war broke out, my mother-in-law came to Israel to help me. And when she flew here, they asked her, how come she only has a one-way ticket? Like, the security. And you know, LL security is not, like, the friendliest. They're mm-hmm. serious people. They asked her, how come she only has a one-way ticket? And she said, I just had to get on the first plane. I had to go help my son's family. Like, the second he was called into war, I knew I had to just be in Israel. And she said the woman broke down, the serious LL security woman, and gave her a huge hug and said, thank you so much for coming to Israel. And she was in shock, like, that does not happen. But I think at the beginning there really was that feeling of, like, we're all in this together, we just need to take care of each other.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I feel like since this all happened, people have said, do you want to go back to Toronto? Like, I have family who lives in Canada. It would be very easy and very safe. And I was thinking, why would I ever go back to Toronto? Like, that seems so... It's funny how strange that seems to me. Like, yeah. Things can be scary, but this is Israel. This is where we belong. If you're, you know, a Jew and you believe in the Torah and Israel, then, like, this is where you have to be, and now's the time. Like, things, you know, would be really different if we had another 300,000 Jews here, a million, two, whatever. I don't even know how many Jews are in America who could come, or other parts of the world, and help us fight and help us build up Israel. I think that there's so much good here, and it's really the place for everyone to be right now. Family. It's funny because, like, you look at videos and it seems so scary there, like the anti-Semitism and everything going on. Like, here, I know that I have a country who's behind me and going to support me and take care of me. Especially thinking of, you know, I mentioned earlier that my grandparents were Holocaust survivors, especially thinking about that, like, I don't want to live in another country where someone else is in charge. Like, we need to be here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can have peace and hopefully everything will be okay. But if it's not, we have people to defend us. The kids who are different ages have all reacted very differently. I think in some ways the baby, it's the hardest. Like Aaron said, you know, I missed a fourth of her life already, a third of her life. And obviously she has no understanding of why suddenly he's there and suddenly he's not and suddenly he's there. And even when he's around, like, she prefers me because she's confused. And that's, like, heartbreaking for him. It's really, really hard. He tries really hard to, you know, be in contact as much as he can. He plays chess with the 8-year-old online. He learns with the 12-year-old. But there's no question that it affects them a lot. The Ganenet of the... I have 5-year-old twins, and the Ganenet told me that one day... she mentioned how hard it is, and I said, well, maybe they could talk to their friends who are also going through it, and she said, that's a terrible idea. One day, one 5-year-old was like, I miss my dad, and then someone was like, I miss my dad, and they were all just crying in the chatzer. And they don't fully understand where he is and what he's doing, but it's really hard for them. It's really hard for them, and they constantly mention, when's he coming back? When's he going? They don't get it, and it's definitely affecting, you know, behavior and other things, but... They're also tough, and they'll get through it. I know the first week I turned to my 8-year-old, he wasn't listening, and I said, can you please just listen? I'm on my own here, and I need you to listen. And he said, well, what if you're always on your own, and something happens to Abba? And in that moment, I realized how much he's keeping in, how hard things have been for him. So sometimes I think they have it all together, and they're totally fine, and then something happens that breaks them. We were playing, like, I didn't even think about it. We were playing, like, a war game, just like a regular Stratego, you know. And all of a sudden, he just burst out crying and ran to his bed and said, what if all the soldiers die? Like, what if... And I was thinking, okay, I need to pay attention more. But most of the time, they don't show you that. My 5-year-old Yehuda just makes card after card after card for Aaron. They're beautiful, and he just doesn't stop every day. I'm just making a card for Aaron. Every time Aaron gets home, there's like 7 cards ready for him with a picture of an Israeli flag and, you know, Aaron being strong.